welcome once again to the Party of One podcast, the actual play RPG podcast where the gaming table is always set for two. I'm your host as always, Jeff Stormer, and this is part three of the Bloodbeam Badlands Fistful of Fangs trilogy. A trio of standalone episodes, each with their own unique guests, that come together to create one ongoing interconnected story set in the world of Bloodbeam Badlands. An irradiated vampiric hellscape. An irradiated apocalyptic hellscape trapped under the eternal blazes of the Forever Dawn. A massive, blazing red sun. It is in this world that vampire gunslingers travel from place to place, shooting and fighting their way out of problems as best they can. You can learn more about Bloodbeam Badlands at videtiavaletti.itch.io, or you can check the show notes for more information. For now, lock and load, vampires, let's ride. My guest this week is Cassiopeia, game designer, author, and actual play performer. Also, fun fact, Cass was the first of the three guests that I played Bloodbeam Badlands with. Everything from the other two episodes kind of bled out of this one. Just a fun little detail for you to have as you listen to this episode. You can find Cassiopeia on Twitter at Malhadale, that's M-A-L-H-I-D-A-E-L, or on Blue Sky at Cassiopeia Twilight. One quick note before we dive in, this is our season finale for our autumn-winter 2023 season, and so after we hit publish on this episode, we're out of here for a little while. We'll be back in a few weeks with the Party of One annual Christmas special, and then a few weeks after that with Brendan Lee Mulligan and All the King's Goblins as the start of our 2024 season. In the meantime, go check out the backlog. There are almost 400 episodes. But first, a note that this episode is sponsored by Multitude Productions and their actual play podcast, Join the Party, as part of their direct creator support initiative. The actual play community is full of incredible creators telling some of the most imaginative stories in all of entertainment, and as fans of the art form, Multitude want to keep finding new ways to support AP creators and their audiences. And to get an idea of some of the amazing work that's being done in the actual play space, look no further than Join the Party. Join the Party is an AP podcast focused on genre-pushing storytelling and celebrating the artistry of its cast and collaborators, and just being a love letter to the medium in general. Their current campaign, they're playing Masks, which is all about teenagers dealing with the drama of superhero high school. If you know me, you know that I love Masks a whole lot, and so that is extremely up my alley. And if you're a fan of actual play storytelling, you should absolutely go check it out and see if they become your actual favorite, well, maybe your second favorite actual play podcast. Check out Multitude and join the party at jointhepartypod.com or connect with them at jointhepartypod on Instagram, Blue Sky, Tumblr, Facebook, or Twitter, and be sure to let them know that Party of One sent you so that they know that their direct creator support initiative is working. And with all that said, let's go ahead and throw it over to me in the past so that he can get started with the show. Take it past me. Thanks, future me. This week I am sitting down with Cassiopeia. Cass, thank you so much for coming on Party of One.
Thanks for having me. I've been following you on Twitter for a while. I have other friends that have had the chance to play with you, and I'm really happy to get to be here.
I'm so excited. I know we've been talking about this game for a little bit, and I've been reading it through this evening, and I am fucking stoked. This week, we are playing Bloodbeam Badlands by friend of the show and personal enemy, Viditya Valetti. I am so stoked to be playing this game. This is a great game, a great premise, and it is extremely up my alley. The premise at a high level is you are a vampire that has survived the apocalypse. The world has become worse than you could possibly imagine. The Forever Day is underway. There is a burning red sun always on the horizon, and irradiated radiation has coated the world and transformed things into a nightmarescape. And now you are a gunslinging vampire wandering the wastes from one job to the next, trying to scrape out a life one tiny little job and tiny little drop of blood at a time. This is sick. I love this. That is one of those pitches. I first read this and was like, I'm desperately waiting until I have an opportunity to play it for the show. So I can't wait to sit down and play with this with you today.
I like Viditya does so many, their games are just so amazing.
Legitimately one of my favorite designers, and this game does not disappoint. So, before we kick off the game proper, we should talk through some calibration. I want to get some touchstones and, like, I want to get a quick vibe check, I think is the best way to describe it. Like, what are the touchstones that you've got in your head for what the story is going to be today? Like, what... Because this is such a, like, big, broad premise thing. Like, what's the... What's the specific vampire post-apocalypse West gunslinging vibe that is in your head today? Like, what's the media that is getting your wheels turning?
I mean, based on the premise, as vague as it is, honestly, the thing that comes up to my mind first and foremost is that section of Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust where he's riding through the desert in the beating sun. And you get that shot of the huge dunes and the ruined highway, but it's not like a standard American highway. It's, you know, some neo-future Victorian highway, but it's also part of ruins and it's not usable anymore. And then you get the huge, the huge sand race leap out of the dunes and soar over him. It's just such a great shot.
That is a great visual. I feel like that's a good, we've got good energy heading into this. I've got some ideas on a scenario to throw at you, and I think that I'm excited. But before we do that, we do have to make your vampire. So I'm going to talk through a little bit about like what goes into a Bloodbeams Badlands character, and then I will have you roll some dice and create that character on the fly. Characters have three stats. They have Guts, Guile, and Guise. Guts is your brawn and courage. It is your monstrous strength. Guile is your wit and cunning, your sharp thinking and quick learning, and Guise is charms and deception and your silver tongue that gets you what you want in a world looking to see you die. You also have three sources. Sources are blood, which is you're a vampire. You drink blood. That's the thing that keeps you alive. Bullets, which is your livelihood. It's the weapons, resources, supplies. And then burn, which is the inevitability, which is your inevitable demise at the hands of the radioactive sun in the sky that you are constantly fighting off at any given moment. That is how you fight against the elements and grit your teeth and power through. So with that, I am going to have you roll 3d3, which is a d6 divided by 2, so 1, 2, or 3, and you are going to assign those numbers to your three stats, your guile, your guts, and your guise.
I'm thinking guile is going to be 3, guts and guise are going to be the 2s. I want to be clever.
All right, and so for your source values, you're going to roll 3d6. You're going to assign the highest result to burn and the other two to your blood and bullets.
Got me a nice 6 on burn. Good for me.
Love it.
Well, I think we're going to go bullets 4 and 3 and see how that plays.
All right. So now finally, you're going to pick your character ability. Every character has certain vampiric abilities. These are the things that come with your immortal self. You're going to choose what you want your thing to be. Is it transubstantiate? Do you have a true monstrous form waiting to break out? Are you do you have an umbral shift, which allows you to enter into the deep umbra, which attunes your body to the demiplane of shadows, the deep umbra? Do you have Varus mutate, which allows you to connect your psychic link to the demiplane of psych, the astral domain? Or do you have phantom blood, which is your heart being a chamber for the ghosts of those you have consumed?
Wow. Wild. Wild.
Sick.
Oh,
it's
God.
Sick.
That's Game so is sick. Hard to pick.
Game is sick.
You know, I think because this we're doing this and it's going to be a one shot, I think I'm just going to go with transubstantiate and have a monster form.
Monster form is good. Monster form, sick. Always never a bad move. All right, so describe to me what that monstrous form looks like, and then you're going to write down three distinct aspects of it. What is the form that is your monstrous vampiric form?
Well, since I pulled from Vampire Hunter D already, I think for this, I'm just going to steal directly from the Helsing anime. And even though I didn't take the shadow transfer, the shadow movement ability, I think like Alucard in Helsing, my true monstrous form is just a black, shadowy mass of unknown proportions with multitudes of mouths and eyes.
That's sick. That's great. So go ahead and mark down three aspects of that. These are the three pieces of that puzzle. You will gain a boost whenever you roll acting with one of those aspects while you are in that form. You can spend blood to do that. You can collect blood by eating things. And we have one final thing to go through for your character, which is your gun. Your gun is something you cherish. It is a source of power in a cursed world. You are going to choose one cursed form of ammo and then describe to me what that gun looks like. It can be seeking ammo, incendiary ammo, phase ammo, grasping ammo, or blood moon ammo.
Every choice is a banger. That makes it really hard.
It really is just bangers all the way down is the thing.
I think I'm going to go with the phase ammo. That sounds pretty wicked.
Phase ammo, runed carved bullets, tether your essence to them. You may, at any point during this bullet travel, you can appear, replacing that. That is an incredibly sick maneuver, especially given that you have this monstrous form. That is a very nice pairing together. You probably have some gear on hand, but you kind of just have whatever gear is useful to you. And otherwise, I guess just a name and some pronouns. What is this vampire gunslinger's name?
Oh boy. It's always really the hardest part, isn't it? Giving something a name. You know what? I'm gonna say I somehow got a hold of like a novel version of the original Nosferatu, and I named myself Orlok after that.
I like that. I really dig that. That's great. All right, so Orlok. We can kick off proper. Orlok, you. Where do we find you? What is the? Let me ask you. Give me a detail of the like roadside stop that we find Orlok at. Like, what do you envision as the specifically, like, you know, in a world of, in a disastrously mutated world of overgrown forests and citywide ruins and massive underground tunnel systems, what is the specifically, like, roadside stop that we find Orlok at the very beginning?
I think this is at the edge of one of those massive cities, and it's a beat up, rusted out diner car. Like you can go sit in an actual diner in the train car type thing that restaurants use. It's one of those.
This diner car is the size of, like, it is, I'm going to say, you know, in the tradition of Bloodbeam's Badland, where everything is big because the world collapsed in on itself, this is specifically a dining car that is the size of a small city block, and like it is multiple layers, and I think that it is specifically, both as a radiation shield and because this is a vampiric structure. I think that the thing that we see is that the windows of the dining car are like coated in a sort of film that gives everything this sort of green light to it. So everything kind of has this green washout light on it. And you are inside. There is a crowd bustling about. Specifically, an airship has just landed. So there is like a fresh crowd of people inside. You are making your way through. What is it that you are that you are doing in this moment of downtime? Like, what is Orlok's downtime moment look like?
I think Orlok just got done running through whatever routine they have for gun maintenance. And as the fresh crowd of people come off the airship and roll into this place, he started to pack that away, and then they pull out a book, like a tattered, beat up, the cover's faded. There's no way to know what the book actually is, but it's Orlok reading, or are they just pretending? who can say?
Actually, I'm going to call for our first roll here. I think you're going to get some information, but it depends on how quickly you get it. If you're reacting to something, if you are reacting to something a moment before it happens or a moment too late. This is a guile roll. This is specifically you are studying the situation. This is a roll for like quick wits and senses. This is a basic check. So this is the standard roll to make. You are going to roll a number of d6s equal to a stat, where and you are going to compare the lowest result that you roll to your source value. And in this case, I think this is a burn roll. I think that you can't fail this unless your lowest result is a 6, which it might be. But like, I think in all likelihood, this is far more about your presence in the moment and in the scenario than it is about like supply or raw physical power. So I think I'm going to have you roll your guys versus your blood, your burn rather, your guys versus your burn.
So then I get to roll 2 dice because my guys is 2, I think.
Yes.
Okay. And then do I add that total together?
No, it is whichever your die result, whatever your lowest die result is, you compare that to your source.
So I got my lowest result is a 4.
Okay. So I am going to allow you to ask a clarifying question of a situation as I introduce you to the situation moments before it happens. You notice. You look around. I think that you're watching. You've got your book. You're watching people step off the train, and you see a particularly anxious looking, like young vampire. He is walking. He has a metal suitcase that you spot at the corner of your eye is handcuffed to his wrist. And the other thing that you notice, is you spot several ominous looking, decently heavily armed vampires trying not to look like they are all almost salivating looking at that briefcase in particular. Not necessarily the person carrying it, but that briefcase, you notice several people kind of locking eyes with each other and locking eyes with the briefcase. You can tell that they are working in unison together. You can tell there's about 4 of them. You can tell that they are wearing similar kind of what I would describe in the old world as like a mix or like biker leather army surplus. So it's kind of got the like patches stitched into it. It is like military, you know, it's sort of that halfway point between military surplus and just in standard like biker vest. And they are all like looking at each other and then looking at the suitcase. Something is about to break out here. You don't have to get involved in it, but something is about, you can tell something is about to break out in this moment.
Ask a clarifying question.
Yes. Give me, since you got a 4 and you're 4 and your source is a 6, I'm going to give you 2 questions about the situation.
Okay. Does the nervous vampire look like they're in a hurry? Or do they look like they might be waiting for someone?
He looks like he is trying to convey that he's not in a hurry. He looks like he is, his head is down, he has eyes on the floor, he is trying very consciously not to attract. He does look like he's in a hurry, but he looks like he's also very crucially like trying to make it look like trying to fall backwards in the crowd. Like you kind of get the sense in his eyes that he doesn't think something is about to go down, but he is afraid that something could go down at a given moment.
And so I guess for my second question then, even though that was sort of two questions.
No, I think that counts as one. I'll stick with that as one.
For my second question, are the biker vampires obviously armed?
I guess the follow my caveat answer here is that is it's obvious to you.
Okay.
It's not obvious to everyone.
Okay.
But like you can tell that they like you know the bulge in a pocket to look for. You know the look of a holster that is being hidden to make it look like it's not a holster. Like you know the details to look for. Where you can tell that these vampires are armed and you can see the movements of their hands where they're kind of like touching the sides of the holster. You can see they're kind of like scrunching their hands and kind of making fists and opening them in the way that like there's almost a sense that you can feel them trying to hype themselves up as they sit and watch and touch their weapons and remind themselves that there are weapons there. You can see that this group is, it doesn't feel like this is like an elite squad. It feels like these are people capitalizing on a job or on an easy target.
Well, you know, the fun of games is getting yourself stuck in terrible situations. So we're going to go walk over and sit down next to this poor guy and order a round of drinks for him.
Yeah, I think that you watch him walk up to a bar. You sit next to him. And I think in that moment, do you sit on the side of the briefcase or not the briefcase?
I think because I don't know why everyone is out for the briefcase, even though it's obviously important, I would sit on the other side.
So I think that, like, you sit on the other side and you are able to, like, with those other vampires, it was a little bit of, like, a guile check, right? Like, it was a little bit of a, like, spotting the things that they want you to hide. This tiny baby is not... dangerous, is not a trained enough fighter that you don't see them reaching for a switch steak, which is like a knife but a switch, or like a switch blade but a steak for a vampire. You see them reaching for the switch steak almost the second that you sit down. How do you react?
I mean, this poor nervous person. I think I just look sideways at them and I'm just like, there's no need for that.
And I think that they repocket the switch stake, kind of throw you a glance at, if you're looking for conversation, I'm not going to offer it. If you're looking for a job, I don't have it. If you're looking for blood or food, there's a lot of options here that are not here. And if you're looking for a safe place to sit, well, you maybe have picked the worst place in the dining car.
Well, it's interesting that you say you don't have a job, because from my point of view, you look like someone who could use some help. And as I say that, I think I subtly motion to a couple of nearest.
There are two of these four vampires sitting at a booth. And I think that, like, as you subtly gesture, I'm going to have you make a roll.
Okay.
I think this is going to be a guile. I'm going to have this be a guile roll versus your... I think this is probably versus bullets. This is a guile roll versus bullets, and I am going to increase the difficulty by one because for a reason that I will reveal in a moment, which means that your guile is one lower than it normally would be.
All right. Well, my lowest roll was a one.
All right. Perfect. The reason that I lowered your source there was because as you subtly gesture, I think you subtly gesture, and in the second that you kind of point in their direction, you realize that, like, they are now looking directly at you specifically. And, like, you know, I think that they don't quite pick up on the fact that you are now, like, that you have pointed at them, but, like, you pick up on the detail that, like, they are very focused on you. The second that you sat down, you became a very important thing to watch. The mm-hmm. second that you entered into this moment, you became, like, a very important presence on the scene.
Oh, man. So happy that I sat myself right down in the middle of the stew at the start of the game. That's always the best way to do things. But now, how do we deal with it? I mean, nothing's popped off just yet. I think the thing to do is just to lean a little closer to my new friend and ask if they've got some place they need to be, because it's getting crowded in here.
And I think that there's a moment where they kind of, they pause and they look to the booth and they look back at you. I need to be on the next airship out of here in the next few minutes. The shorter amount of time that I am here, the better. And I am headed... Well, you wouldn't believe me if I told you.
Fair enough.
If you can get me onto that airship platform in the next few moments, I might have... And I think that he kind of, like, reaches into... I think that what I'm envisioning, I think, at this moment of, like, what he's wearing is... It is horror movie post-transformation character outfit where the cufflinks of the outfit have been ripped, but it is like a very dusty, very patchwork suit, vest, and unbuttoned at the collar dress shirt. And he reaches into that chest pocket. You see him fiddle with, like, You can see his fingers kind of, like, twist for a moment. You can tell with your trained eyes that he is flicking a vial between his fingers. And he looks over. I have something for you if you can get me to an airship platform. I have a feeling that the second we start moving, those two, as well as any of their other friends that might be elsewhere, are going to move on us. So we need to move fast and decisively. Can you make that happen?
I mean, I'm really tempted to answer the question just by pulling a Danny DeVito. And so anyways, I start blasting.
That feels like the bet that I feel like that at this moment. Like, now that you've said it, I think that's what happens.
Okay, so I'm totally okay to start blasting. But I think since this place is big enough, I'd imagine... There's not just the bar, but there's, like, tables and stuff, actual tables and stuff, too. So I would like to just, okay, before I say that, how close are the two in the booth to where we are?
I think about three table lengths away, like three, like, dining tables away is where, like, they're against one of the, like, side walls, so probably, I'd say 60 feet, or, like, 60 feet away. Close enough that they could make a run at you, far enough that they might opt to try and handle things at a distance instead.
Okay. I think, then, what I would like to do is... kick over the nearest table to give my new friend and I some cover before I start shooting at the biker vampires.
All right, roll me guts versus blood.
I got a 5 as my lowest.
And your
blood is 3.
All right. I think in that moment, you kick the table, it goes flying, They duck and weave. And I think at that moment, at that moment, they've got to transform, right? That's how this is, I think, unfolding. And, like, they transform. I think one of them transforms in an instant into like, a small person-sized Tyrannosaurus Rex and just tears the table in two and starts just rushing straight at you. Your friend books it, having understood that is the cue to go, and starts rushing for a platform. There is now a T-Rex and a vampire with dual pistols, having done the gunslinger twirl, the guns, grab the pistols, and, like, is now trying to duck behind a booth, but most importantly, there is a T-Rex running directly at you.
I think what Orlok does is, I think they mutter something. No, this is not even a mutter. Like, seriously, a T-Rex? As they follow the guy with the case outside, but shooting at the T-Rex as they run.
I think I'm going to increase the difficulty by one, so I'm going to lower your result, but I think that this is a bullets roll. This is a guts roll versus bullets, I think is what this is. So your bullets is a three because you're running and this T-Rex is bounding upon you. I think I'm going to have say this is this that's what the roll is.
Okay. And my bullets is a four.
Right, so it's going to bump that down to a three because I am increasing the difficulty by one.
But it's guts versus bullets?
Yes.
I got a three.
All right. On a three. I'm so excited that you got a three. That is the best possible number for you to roll at this moment. Because a three is a spectacle. Your lowest die result is equal to exactly your source value, which means something explosive happens. You both disastrously succeed and triumphantly fail. And I know exactly what happens. Describe to me how you take down the T-Rex, because I think that the T-Rex goes down is half of this. The other half is the thing that happens immediately after.
Okay. So I think, because, I mean, this whole game is just vampire anime at right. this point in my mind. So to just steal directly from another anime favorite of mine, I have a 45 caliber gun that looks like Vash the Stampede's guns. Cause why not?
Sure.
1995 Vash the Stampede is peak 90s anime. Thank you.
It's the iconic.
And I think even though this handgun doesn't have the capability of actually doing this the way I understand handguns, having been a firearm safety instructor and stuff like that. But I basically fan the hammer. So if this revolver has six shots or whatever, I just dump everything into one burst as I leap from the table.
And I think that, yeah, I think that we see this, the T-Rex gets just torn to shreds. I think turns back into a vampire, gets obliterated. The other vampire guns out, starts to take aim, and that is when the wall of the dining car, directly in front of where your friend is running, where you are running, the two of you are both confronted. I think that the two six-shooter guns, like, hold, because the roof and wall of the dining car in this section is ripped off of its hinges, is like just ripped. There's a giant colossal hole as a what's the wildest monster that pops into my head. I'm gonna just stick with where my head was at and say I don't know why it's such a dinosaur theme, but like somewhere between like a gargoyle from Gargoyles and a pterodactyl, like a pterodactyl like face, which I think is just one of the gargoyles now that I say it out loud.
I think that's very similar to the red one.
Yeah, the red one.
The red guy. What's his name? Oh Lord, that's gonna bother me the rest of the time.
I'm looking it up.
Is it Brooklyn? I don't think it is, but I feel that's what my brain is telling. It is Brooklyn. I was right. All right. My God.
Justification. Yes. It looks a little bit like if you imagine Brooklyn without the sick mullet, I think is how it looks. A gigantic, and then also the size of like a small helicopter has ripped a massive hole. There are explosions happening outside, and the airship field is blocked by this colossal creature, and in a booming voice from outside, you hear,
"Your pursuit is over. You are to hand over the heart. We are willing to let you live if you hand over the heart. It is non-negotiable. It is the heart or it is your life. Either way, we leave here with the briefcase and we leave here with the heart. Is that to be understood?"
And I think that your friend like pauses, stares off into space, stares at you. "So do you think you can still get me to that airship?"
Oh, God. So many things. I think Orlok is just like bollocks. I mean, what's there to do? But maybe it's time to bust out my own form.
All right. You are transforming into your shadow form. Yeah. So let me ask you this. How this works, I'm going to read it from the text to read how the transformation effect happens. When you transform, you are going to spend one blood for each aspect of your yourself that you are manifesting, and then when you do so and you act within one of those aspects of your true form, you will gain an additional boost for each additional aspect. If you try to keep your aspects active after the scene, you make a guts roll. But for now, you are going to spend an amount of blood to manifest a certain amount of your monstrous form.
So the aspects I wrote down are shadow form, so it's harder to hit me.
Mm-hmm.
Black tentacles for a melee attack in case, you know, the gun's always good, but also hitting things with tentacles is anime as hell. And then horrific visage, even to other vampires, this is horrifying to witness. I don't know what this gargoyle-like creature is. It could be a vampire in its monstrous form for all I know, but I'm going to activate my form with two of my three aspects. I'm going to activate it with horrific visage and shadow form. Two of my three blood.
So you activate this, you rush at the creature. I'm going to say throws the chunks of metal in its hands and paws at you, and they fly effortlessly through your shadowy form. You lock up with this thing, and you get the sense immediately that this is not a vampire. This is a magical radioactive creature. This is the magical construct of some kind of a warlock. Somebody has magically used the very Thundar, the barbarian sense of like magic, apocalyptic, radioactive sci-fi magic to turn this to create this sort of gigantic murder dragon and descend it upon this like airfield dining car. I think that this is probably guts, right? This has got to be guts. And I think that in this moment, I think this is guts versus blood is what I think this is.
Okay.
And you can add those boosts of those. I'm gonna allow you to add both of those boosts back. And I think that in doing so, it is going to counteract the two difficulty that I am adding because of the size and relative ferocity of this thing. So you are rolling guts versus blood to try and hit a low result of one. But if you succeed at this, you will get to feed on this murderous fucking giant dragon thing.
Okay, so how does a boost work? Is that an extra die?
Let me remind myself. I think it is, I believe.
Okay, so So then I would get two for the two aspects I activated.
No, boost is you treat the source as one higher. So you
So it's treating my blood as three instead of one.
Correct.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so you're rolling for three. And you can keep this form active for the remainder of the scene.
You, I think you'll be happy with the fact that I got a three, which is the number of the sources.
Fantastic. Oh, so first off, I'm going to have you feed. I think before we do anything else, I am going to have you feed. And I know exactly, this is great because it's going to feed into exactly the next thing that I've wanted to happen. I think that, so let me find the note on what happens when you feed on a creature as you, and then I'm going to just have you describe tearing this monstrosity to shreds. When you eat the heart of something to satiate you in your monstrous form, roll D3s equal to the size, rarity, and love of the heart you're consuming. I think this is a full 3D3. You are going to gain, so you're going to roll those 3D3 and gain any source equal to the highest rolled die.
Okay, well, I think being that currently blood is the lowest, I think that's what we're going to...
That feels good.
Pump that back up and put that up to a four, because that was my highest die.
And I think you crap. What happens is what the complication is, you are fighting this thing. I think that like the remaining three vampires like hold back. I think that they set off running after your friend, right? You are being fought by the dragon. They don't need to worry about you. They are running after your friend. Your friend makes it outside. Outside on the airfield, there are airships. There are those fucking Morrowind like siltworms that they can fly around. There are zeppelins. It is a fucky post-apocalypse airfield. And you come crashing through it. Your friend starts to climb on board, the compartment of a Zeppelin, at which point you and the dragon both crash through the, like, both, it starts to take off. You both pierce the actual blimp portion. And, obviously there's an explosion. The car of the thing sprouts like wings to kind of like jet it away in a hurry, and you are sent tumbling onto the top of this plane, of this like makeshift plane underneath an explosion, as it is like haphazardly puttering, half gliding, half flying. You watch the remains of the dragon tumble off into the night. What do you do in this very precarious moment?
I mean, I want to like coolly adjust my tie, but that's not the kind of outfit he's wearing. I think Orlok stands up, but he's like dusting his shoulders off. Like, I've had worse landings. And then he checks his gun, and cause he emptied the entire gun in that first go of, and he's just like, you know, reloading and checking the gun, and just look us over at the new friend. I've had worse landings.
So you have pierced through the roof of this thing. The landing, the plane itself is like barely flying. And I think in that moment, the real complication shows itself, which is that your friend is against the wall, and they are looking in abject horror. As they look, and the briefcase has like crashed against a wall and is like crackling and glowing. It is open, and you see it start to glow. You see it start to crackle, and you realize that like there is an energy in this briefcase that is unlike anything that the world has seen in centuries. And like you feel it. You feel it in your heart, and you feel it at the book on your hip, as you see the heart start to fly out of it. It is a heart with a Texas Bowie knife jammed into the middle of it. This motherfucker found the heart of Dracula.
Oh my god.
What do you do?
I mean, who doesn't want to be as powerful as Dracula? But also, I think my reaction would just be to start blasting it.
I'm gonna have you roll. I think like you're still in your bestial form, so you can add any aspects that you like. But in this moment, unless you want to send it away, but in this moment you're still in your bestial form. But so that means you can add those boosts to your build, to your roll if you like. This is absolutely a guts versus bullets roll.
I don't know. There's so many things that I don't understand about this weird post-apocalyptic universe. The Heart of Dracula has a Bowie knife in it, and it's full of crackling energy. Do I try and envelop it and eat it? Do I shoot? Oh, God, I don't know. I think Dracula's too dangerous, honestly. That's the feeling I get. Like,
okay.
You know, I think it's one of those things of, like, everyone. Dracula being typically the first vampire, right? I think everyone's afraid of the power that is Dracula, and chances are this being unleashed in my mind is like, oh, this fucker's gonna come back, and that's bad for not just the humans that are left, but all of us.
I really like that.
I think I do start shooting at it.
All right, roll me guts versus bullets.
With my boosts, I got a 3, which is under my source.
Okay, then that is a success. You blast the thing out of the sky. It is crackling with energy. You shoot it. It splatters against a wall. It is still glowing with power, but like it's not surging in the same way. I think that what you did is you shot the tip of the Bowie knife, which drove it a little deeper into the heart, which kind of like gave it a shock, pushed it against the wall, and it's like down, but it's still kind of crackling like it could explode at any moment. I think that you walk towards it, gun in hand. The plane is still somewhere between crashing and gliding, and your friend stands up. You don't know what you're doing. Please, you have to listen. You have to hear me out.
I think Orlok snaps the breech open on the revolver, ejects the shells, and not quickly, but not necessarily taking their time, is like, you have until I've finished reloading to convince me.
What if we could use that power without bringing Dracula back? I believe, and there are others like me who believe, that if we plug this thing into a, well, they call it a reactor, I don't know what I would call it, but we believe that we could spread this power across every vampire out there on the wastes. We could all, for a moment, of Harry, a fragment of that power. Don't you want just a fragment of the power of the first vampire? Imagine how we could reform things.
I think when that sentence ends is when the click snap of the revolver closing happens to punctuate. And there's, if you'll allow me, I think there's that pregnant pause in the air of like, am I going to consider what they said? I mean, who doesn't want that kind of power? He's not wrong. Maybe we could make the world a better place. But really, the world's so fucked, and all this is going to do, I think, is fuck it worse. So I shoot it.
You shoot it or you shoot him?
You know what? I will shoot it, because if he survives, maybe I'll have a cool reoccurring enemy if I ever get to play again.
I like that. You shoot it. You shoot it. You fire your bullets at it. Because this is splatterpunk, that we got a good splattering effect, and he screams with rage, and at that moment, he screams with rage, and his bodily form like kind of shatters a little bit. Like, he kind of, like, splinters that form a little bit. And you can see that he is, like, this is another vampire pact. I am looking at the character abilities. He is reaching into the deep umbra and, like, pulling at it. And no, he is act. No, I'm going to have him do the psychic plane because I think that's great. Because I think that, like, yeah, you kind of see his form kind of shatter a little bit. And it is just like, there is just like crystalline energy all in the air as, like, he kind of surrounds the heart. And, like, holding it in this sort of crystalline cloud of psychic energy. Fool. You think that one bullet is going to blow up the heart of... is going to... as long as one single cell of this beautiful object remains, then we, my fellow Renfeld Society members, we can rebuild this. You had your choice. You could have been part of the elite. You could have been part of the ruling class of this world. And instead, you're going to be the first of many bodies that we litter it with. And I think that, time freezes. You find yourself locked in the astral realm. And you look out and you see... what do you imagine? What does Orlok imagine Dracula looks like?
I mean, as a player, my mind immediately goes to Castlevania. So I like that. That's a that's peak Dracula to me. So I think that's what he looks like.
There is a Castlevania Dracula, like, standing in front of you, like, holding the remnants of the heart. When you can tell that this is the astral illusion form of the Renfield that is in front of you. And you look out, though, and you see walking through the dining car, like, you see another Dracula walking in the dining car. You see several more. And as you look out, you just see, like, in this astral plane, dozens and dozens of Dracula walking around. Holding the heart. Floating the knife into his hand. Perhaps you could have beaten me outside of here, gunslinger. What weapons do you bring to the table here in the astral plane? And I think starts to, like, stroll towards you and starts to, like, grow larger and larger and just more and more ominous. What in this infinite dreamscape do you do? What power do you pull upon in this moment?
I mean, what the hell? We'll go with this. Sure. I think, unbeknownst to this Renfield person, that I have a better link to Dracula than he does.
Oh.
And I think that it doesn't make me necessarily immune to whatever's going to happen. But rather than being something flashy, it gives me, like, resistance against, I guess if we're in the astral plane, like, mental attacks or something like that.
I'm going to have you roll Guile versus Burn with 2 difficulty, so your burn is down to 6. Or your burn is down from 6 to 4.
Okay.
As you hold this, because I think that, like you are conjuring this resistance in a space where somebody is holding the literal heart of Dracula, and, like, you are resisting against it, and I think that your link to Dracula allows you to make this roll, is what I will say.
Okay. Right. I got a 2, which is under the source.
How do you take control of this energy and banish this being to the astral plane?
Okay, so I think since we haven't discussed it before, I think within the lore of our world tonight, all vampires end up with the same eye color.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, with the exception of, like, Dracula had, no one has Dracula's eye color. And as I take control, my eyes change from that that yellowish green that all vampires end up with.
Yep.
To a, like, not quite white, but maybe a really striking silver.
I like that. That's cool.
And the energy around the heart changes to match that color, and that was Dracula's eye color.
That's cool. I like that a lot. And I think that, like, as you take this control of the energy of the heart, like, in the astral energy in this space feeds into you, and slowly, like, this Renfield dries out and eventually just, like, shatters like glass, just like crystalline glass, just sugar glass, just crumbles, and you blink and you are still in this, you blink and you are in this crashing plane. You blink out just in time for the like hang glider Zeppelin survival plane to crash into the ground. Your shadowy form flies out of it. You tumble to the ground, and there are three vampires standing above you. One of them with two pistols at their holster. One of them, what are two other good weapons? What are some good weapons for vampires to have in this moment?
I think so. You said there's three vampires. If one has dual pistols, I think one should have a sword.
Gotta be a sword.
And
I'm gonna say one of them is like a it's like a string weapon. It's kind of a mace. It's one of those like mace yo-yo string things. It's sort of a pendant at the end of it that glows with arcane power, and they just kind of have it tangled up in their fingers. Three of them are standing over you. You a Renfield?
How much jackass comes out in this moment is the real question. I'm feeling very Constantine tonight, I guess, where he's just like, I look like a fucking Renfield.
And I think all three of them lock eyes with each other. You got the heart?
That's a good question. Do I have the heart?
I think the heart is shattered and smeared on the wall of the glider.
Okay. That's fair. I was like, that's a good clarifying question right there. I think I just gesture to the smear where I shot it against the wall.
I think that what you have, what I'm going to say, because I think that this is a good, even if this is just a one shot, this is a good MacGuffin to leave it on.
Yeah.
I think what you have is the Bowie knife. You have the Bowie knife, which is smeared in the blood of Dracula. And if the rest of it is destroyed, that is all that remains of it.
Okay. I like that.
I think they look over at the glider. They look at you. I mean, they did kill Rex. Do we want to get a vengeance kill? I don't think we particularly need one, but I mean, it would be fun. If we don't vengeance kill you, are you going to be chill?
The answer is yes, but now I need to figure out how Orlok would phrase it. Because, like, Orlok's definitely, like, Orlok's the kind of person that, the shit they just went through, they don't want to do anything else today. You know? Oh, God, what's a good response?
That kind of feels like a really good response. The shit I've been through today, you think I want to do anything else?
That's true. I think you're right. He literally, there's like the subtlest sigh. The shit I've been through today. You think I want to do anything else?
All right. I think we're in agreement that we're not going to vengeance kill you. And I think like stashes the two guns, offers you a hand, lifts you to your feet. I guess we should probably talk about some things. You looking for work? And all three or four of you are kind of walking back towards the tattered remnants of the dining car.
I wouldn't say no, but right now I'm just looking for shade.
We'll get some shade. We'll get some grub. You seem pretty good at killing this Renfield fucker, and I imagine there's a couple more of them out there. And that knife of yours that got stabbed through Drac's heart way back in the olden days, that's probably something they're going to be looking for. So let's get some shade. Let's get some blood. and let's talk about how we can maybe work together.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. And as the four of you walk off, we peel back and we see that blood red sun in the sky. We see the fiery remnants of that Zeppelin and that glider. And I think that we see the shadow of Dracula on the horizon. And we leave it at that, and that's game.
Amazing.
That was cool. That was really cool and fun, and I'm glad for all the directions that that went in. That was sick. Did you have a good time?
That was great. I had a great time.
So truly, I have to share this because that went in so many fun directions. I had like three different directions that could have gone in, and I'm happy with the one that we landed on. I truly was not sure if that vampire was going to be like a hero and the heart of Dracula was like an actual optimistic like power source, or if it was, yeah, we're summoning Dracula and it's exactly as fucked as you think it's going to be. It was really come down to like however you responded to hearing that was going to be the characterization of the person with the briefcase.
Nice. I've had enough media where Dracula's never a good choice.
I do like that. I genuinely do like that as like a moral constant, even in media where everyone is a vampire, where it's like, hey, if you say Dracula, that's a different level. Like that's a different thing that we're working on.
Yeah.
We may be vampires, but that's Dracula. Oh, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for playing this with me. I had the best time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This was so fun.
So real quick, before we wrap up, where can people find you and your work online?
You can find me at cassiopeiatwilight.itch.io. cassiopeiatwilight.itch.io. I've got a bunch of indie games that I've written. I've got a short story about vampires that if you listen to this episode and want some more vampires, there's that. Otherwise, I'm on Twitter, I guess. Twitter's kind of falling apart. I don't know.
Provided it still exists, the ongoing disclaimer is we're all on Twitter, provided it exists when this episode drops.
Yep. So I guess that's at Mal Hidael, MalHidael. And I think that's it right now.
All right. Well, thank you again for doing the show. This was an absolutely delightful game. And for now, I'm going to throw it over to me in the future so that he can wrap up with the show. Take a future me. Thanks, past me. And thanks again to Cassiopeia for coming on the show. That game was, I mean, it birthed three incredible games. Like, that game was, it captured my imagination so much that I wanted to make this big, elaborate audio experiment. So, like, I could not be more grateful for the opportunity to play and to tell this wonderful, chaotic story together. Be sure to pick up your own copy of Bloodbeam Badlands at viditiavaletti.itch.io, and be sure to follow Cass on Blue Sky at Cassiopeia Twilight or on Twitter at Mal Hidael. Then while you're on Twitter, follow us at Party of One Pod. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Party of One Podcast. Find us on TikTok at Party of One Podcast. Find us on Tumblr at Party of One Pod. Subscribe to our newsletter at buttondown.email/Party of One Podcast. And join our Discord community at bit.ly/Party of One Discord. If you enjoy the show, there's a lot of ways to support it. You can support us financially at patreon.com/JeffStormer or ko-fi.com/JeffStormer. You can give us a nice iTunes review, shout us out to a friend, give us some love on social media. You can buy some Party of One merch at bit.ly/Party of One merch. Or, if you're looking for more great podcast content, you can check out All My Fantasy Children, which is a character creation, storytelling, and world-building podcast that I make with my best friend in the world, Aaron Catano-Saez. We take a listener-submitted prompt and spin it into an original fantasy character, populating a shared universe one story at a time. You can also check out Yazeba's Bed and Breakfast, which is an actual play about a heartless witch, a cozy house, and the many people making their homes inside. Both of those you can find wherever you get your podcasts. Party of One is, as always, produced and edited by Jeff Stormer and Jen Frank. Music for the show comes from the song Infinite Lives by Megaran, featuring the D&D Sluggers, and the Party of One logo is by Evan Rowland. If you'd like to inquire about advertising rates coming onto the show as a guest or about press coverage of the show, you can email me at partyofonepodcast@gmail.com. And unless I am mistaken, that is all we do here. So until next time, thank you so much for listening. Remember to fight the forces of fascism every single day. Remember that self-love and self-care are radical and defiant acts of resistance. And as always, party on, everybody.